Welcome to First Things First. Good morning, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright.
That would be me.
You're taking out of your pocket a little pen action, ready to go.
Yes.
Pen highlighter. I would like to congratulate you, Jenna Wolf.
I thought you told me to take over the opening.
You're right.
This guy right here, we're doing makeup. He's like, Chris, I need you to be a little more excited when we start the show. I need you to sit, I'm going to sit back a little bit, and I need you and Jenna there. I was like, Nick, I got you today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I come out.
Yeah.
And there it is. I knew if I said just a little thing, it would engage you, and now
here
we are.
Guess what? It totally works. It's heavy lifting having to do the 30-second open all by myself and then sit back for 2 hours.
So I tried to have your back.
59 minutes and 30 seconds.
There you go. That was really good math on the fly, Jenna.
Thank you very much.
You did that back time from 3 hours.
Don't expect anything else after that. So what do you got?
Great way to start a Monday show. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's go. It's Tuesday. If you are spending your NBA offseason chomping at the bit to see Boogie Cousins in a Warriors game, keep chomping. You guys didn't think I knew what day it was. Boogie is still recovering, they told me in my ear, from an Achilles injury he suffered in January. And while he recently told reporters he wants to be ready by training camp in September, Warriors GM Bob Myers has a slightly different timetable in mind. Take a listen.
You can't really tell with a guy, any guy, him or any guy, until they get on the court and do certain things.
Sure.
But the goal for us would be to have him in the playoffs. That doesn't mean we'll wait till the playoffs, but when he's ready to play, he'll play. We just don't know when that'll be.
All right, so CeCe, you kind of heard him there. They're thinking playoffs is more the timetable, which is when they actually really need him. Whether he's ready before then or not, we'll see. How hard will it be for Boogie to fit in on this Warriors team if he isn't ready until the end of the season?
Well, I believe the general manager is doing the right thing because they've taken the window and they've extended it. Most people that talk about Boogie said he should be ready to play or definitely do on-court stuff in December, January. Then people talk about the All-Star break, that being February. So if you as the general manager are sending the message to not only throughout the organization but to your fans, man, we're not expecting him to. When did the playoffs start, Nick?
Right, April.
April. I mean, you've extended that window so in case you have a setback. Because we know the Warriors, the pressure is not on the regular season. It's about the postseason. And if you can think about how they've dominated the postseason the last 2 years, and that's the only thing he's got to get ready. To me, that alleviates a lot of pressure compared to people would say, well, on the other side, if he doesn't play during the regular season, it's a bunch of pressure. Well, in the playoffs, I mean, how contested will they be in the first round? Now, I do believe that the regular season is important because how the seeding might go in the West. You don't want to be the third seed. You don't want to be the fourth seed. You want to be in the one or two slot, which they have been in this run that they're on.
Like, they would be the heavy favorites to be the one seed, even though they weren't last year, had they not gotten Boogie. There's no situation that can arise, I would imagine, this season where they're not the one or the two seed because there's not a team that I'm like, oh, they were really close and they got much better, and right. The Warriors didn't get worse. To me, this is a bit of mental games, and I don't say that with a negative connotation. It's just they are setting the table, in my eyes, for if when Boogie does come back, which will be during the regular season, he isn't immediately getting the minutes that he thought he would, mm-hmm. the touches that he thought he would, they can say, hey, man, it's always been part of the plan. It's always been for you to be full go come the playoffs. Don't worry about it right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then also I think a guy that might be a little disgruntled about his lack of playing time in a regular season game in February, harder to be that type of distraction for your team in your first ever playoff appearance, where all of a sudden you're playing with a bunch of champions, the two-time defending champions, and if wait till the playoffs. And if that carrot they've been extending, you never actually get to grab, it's hard to raise too much of a ruckus because now you're in your first playoffs. Mm-hmm. I do want to say this, though. If Bob Myers is correct, like if this were to be the actual case, that Boogie is not ready for full go until the playoffs, then this will have been just a useless experiment. Because what they will not do, I can say this with almost full certainty, unless they suffer some significant injury, is have one lineup and rotation throughout the regular season and then come the playoffs, drastically remake it to fit Boogie in. Boogie is going to have to start fitting in before the playoffs for him to be useful in the playoffs.
There's a very big difference, though, between what Boogie seems to think and what Myers seems to be saying. Boogie's like, I'll be ready by training camp. And it is an 8 to 10 month rehab period with the Achilles. That is much more than an 8 to 10 month rehab. I think what Bob Myers is doing, which is obvious, is he's tempering expectations so that someone like Boogie Cousins, who tends to maybe have a bit of maybe an irrational approach to where he should be and how he fits in, doesn't start pounding his fist. But my question to you would be, wouldn't this be a conversation that his people would have had with the Warriors before signing on? Like, look, hey, this is where we need you. I mean, maybe the Warriors themselves are thinking, hey, you know where we could use him? In the postseason, where the Rockets got close. But let's maybe have this conversation with him so he knows.
I don't think there were extended conversations. I think the conversations were what Steve Kerr said they were. Listen, there's going to be 4, 5, 6 possessions. You don't touch the basketball. You good with that? Yep. We're going to be very cautious with your rehab approach. You good with that? Absolutely. Now, again, like I don't think Bob Myers is coming out there saying he won't play until the playoffs. He's just he is setting the goalpost so far down the field that whenever Boogie comes back, the Warriors can stay ahead of schedule and start building that narrative for him, which is the best thing the Warriors can do for DeMarcus Cousins this season, is help him repair his image. Part of that also, by the way, is help the rest of the league think he's healthy, rehab went well, he's ahead of schedule.
Yeah, and we also can't forget how they acquired DeMarcus Cousins. He called them. They didn't call him. So he called them. In their response, they didn't even believe the first initial contact. So in having several conversations, they say it took 3 conversations for the general manager and them to be kind of believe that, yeah, this might happen. I'm sure they got the injury report and they've got the doctor's information. They couldn't have signed him without trying to look into that. And like you talked about, the conversation with Steve Kerr, Steve let him know as far as what some of the things that we're thinking. When you have an injured player like DeMarcus, who has been an all-star, you want to try to remove the expectations or kind of maybe downplay with your expectations early to give him a chance. Also, this is a strange injury. It's not an ACL. It's not something that we deal with all the time. We're talking about an Achilles. We haven't seen the elite players, our NBA players, come back and do as well as they have done, except in 30 years, we've seen Dominique Wilkins do that. We haven't seen Kobe and a bunch of other players.
Elton Brand, who's stylistically similar. He has 2 careers, pre-Achilles, post-Achilles.
You know, so I believe that they're going about it the right way. They have won 2 out of the last 3 championships. There is no pressure during the regular season, so why put that pressure on their newly acquired player in DeMarcus Cousins?
All right, there's one guy whose name we haven't mentioned much when it comes to the Warriors and DeMarcus Cousins, but I think he is the player that could be the key to how this thing works and how much DeMarcus can handle what will be a much lesser role than he's had anywhere else. And that's Andre Iguodala. Because Andre Iguodala walked into a situation very different than Boogie. He was traded for having started every single game of his career. Every game Iggy had been healthy from his rookie season to the moment he got traded to the Warriors, he was a starter for. He's traded there thinking, I'm going to be a starter. Steve Kerr then makes some changes. Draymond becomes a starter. A lot of things happen. And he has to go to Andre Iguodala and say, You're not a starter, and you're never going to be a starter. His first 3 years there, he started 1 game. Last year, he started 7 due to injury. And Iggy, it was hard for him early on, but he eventually realized how he could be used and why it was good for the team as a whole. He didn't sign up for that. He was thrown into that. Andre Iguodala is a respected veteran in this league and is a guy who has had no winning experience prior to coming to Golden State. All he got in Golden State, he got no all-star appearances, he got none of that stuff. Mm-hmm. All he got was the championship pedigree capped off by the finals MVP. Andre Iguodala talking to DeMarcus Cousins about how to go through this part of a career, I think is incredibly valuable because Steph and KD and Klay don't have that experience. They don't have I went from the star guy to a lesser guy. He's the one guy who can talk DeMarcus through this.
That is a good point. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, will LeBron James have regrets about signing in L.A.? That was next on Chris. While LeBron James is enjoying his first few weeks of life as a Laker, we are learning more now about his decision 3.0. Yes, he announced he would become a Laker on the opening night of free agency, but also, yes, league insiders believe it was a harder decision than most think. One 76er executive says LeBron very strongly considered coming to Philly. Nick, any chance LeBron regrets passing on the Sixers if the Lakers don't get Kawhi?
I don't think so. LeBron, absolutely, Philly was on the table. But by the time Philly got in the room with Rich Paul, I've been told LeBron had already made his decision. He was going to Los Angeles. But Philly, they did make the medal stand, if you will.
Yeah.
They were in the final three teams that he was considering, Houston right on the outside there. Listen, LeBron knew, no matter if they got Kawhi or not, that he obviously knew Paul George wasn't going there when he signed. Paul George already re-signed. That this was not the best place to win this season. This, if LeBron wanted to be mercenary LeBron and sign a one-year deal with Houston or with Philly and then potentially make another decision next year, do another short-term contract, there were places he could go that would be an easier path back to the NBA Finals and a more definite collection of talent around him for this season. LeBron made a long-term decision. Now, I think he's totally content with it. I think he's very confident they will be getting at least one additional all-star caliber player, most likely Kawhi Leonard. But he also knew that Kawhi Leonard wasn't a free agent and that was no sure thing when he made this decision. So, no, I do not think that because they are yet to get Kawhi or even if they don't get Kawhi this year, LeBron would regret the decision because he didn't make the decision based on where is the best place to win a championship this season, because the Lakers would have been very low on that list.
Hey, Nick, the first time LeBron, decision number one, when he decided to take his talent to South Beach, who came second?
Who came in second that
year?
Was it Chicago?
All right. And then the second time he decided to go to Cleveland, surprise some people, mm-hmm. some other people not surprised, like myself.
Yes.
And you heard about it. What team was second in that time?
I think it was Miami, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. I thought staying in Miami was his best bet.
I think that whoever it was, it didn't matter because we weren't talking
Got
about
you. It. Okay, that's why I don't
you
remember.
Know? So,
fair enough.
So the 76ers general manager at this point with the talented roster that they have, they should have moved on. He shouldn't be sitting there talking about, you know something? The girl gave me a kiss on the cheek and we was getting ready to start going steady. But she wasn't even thinking about that. She was just trying to be polite. So I think it's really irrelevant who was second, who was third, and who was fourth.
But is there anything to the fact that maybe the Sixers released this as just one final little way to sell it to someone like Kawhi? Hey, listen, LeBron almost came here, and nothing but the best for LeBron. He ended up going to the Lakers, but he almost came here. He was deciding, like, could that be a carrot that has been dangled?
The guy didn't have anything else better to talk about. Kawhi has not shown any interest in trying to come to Philadelphia. They have been crystal clear as far as what their goals were. And when people tried to distort what his actual goals were, they reiterated, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to go to Los Angeles. It don't have to be with the Lakers, but Los Angeles is our destination. And sidebar, there is no Paul George situation. There is no situation where Kawhi is going to be convinced after a year. So I don't see the value in the front office person releasing this information. And given that they don't have a general manager in place, like, it was going to be hard to land LeBron. If you know the LeBron story and you know how family-oriented this decision was going to be. Now, LeBron and his group, they did do some research. They did check on the schools and everything in Philadelphia as far as where his sons and where his kids would be going to school. But that's about it. LeBron had two houses already in Los Angeles. Magic Johnson was already in place, ready to knock on his door at midnight when he could as a free agent Eastern Standard Time. So, yeah, I can understand Philadelphia, but then you have almost a championship roster. You should be concentrating on that compared to doing interviews talking about, you know, I almost missed on that. Almost. So you know what's going to happen now? If they don't make it to the NBA Finals, they don't make it to the Eastern Conference, people are still going to be asking them questions. Man, do you guys feel like if you had LeBron James? That ship has sailed. It's time to move on.
In Philly's defense, it was one of the managing partners, so it's not the GM or the coach. It's one of the guys at the top of the organization.
They don't exactly have a GM right now.
No, but I'm saying this was a guy at ownership level that was making these comments.
Yeah.
All right, but I want to say something about LeBron and this decision to the Lakers. And maybe LeBron will be proven foolhardy for this, but there is a narrative that is starting to build that it wasn't that family wasn't just part of the equation, that the brand and the city and the lifestyle in Los Angeles weren't just part of the equation, but they were the entirety of the equation. That LeBron has given up the idea that he's going to compete for any more championships. That's flatly false. And listen, LeBron clearly believes that not only is he still the best player in the league, but that that will remain the case for next year, the year after, likely the year after that. And you know who's a contender? Any team that has him on it. That's his mindset. And that that will stay, maintain being the case for the next few seasons. And that even after those few seasons, he's got a couple more quality seasons left. Now, NBA history says it's almost impossible for that to be true.
Right.
But he believes that to be true. So the idea that he went to the Lakers and now has just decided winning titles is no longer going to be part of my story, he would say that is flatly false. Now, bodies betray guys. And Father Time, as everyone says, is undefeated eventually.
But no one has a resume like LeBron going against Father Time year 15.
He's already in unprecedented territory.
Yes.
He thinks he is going to extend that to triple unprecedented territory. Maybe he might be proven wrong. Maybe if mid-year 16 suffers an injury and, like, you never see this version of LeBron again, you might say, he'd have been better off in Houston or Philly. That is not something he is and the least bit concerned about.
So let's get back to the headline here in that the Sixers say LeBron was definitely deciding and seriously, strongly considering the Sixers. How much of that and LeBron's decision to go to the Lakers instead has to do with what happened in the Sixers organization with Colangelo leaving and with sort of the disarray with the Sixers brass?
I don't believe that was the final thing, but I believe that when you're looking at a decision like this, it's part of the equation. Because when you don't know who the general manager is, and based on LeBron's past, you have to remember that having a strong general manager is a huge part to LeBron's success. Went to Miami under Pat Riley. Success immediately. And a lot of the basketball decisions, like the things that LeBron got blamed for the last 4 years, he didn't get blamed for that in Miami. You know why? Strong general manager in Pat Riley. So not having a general manager, it does hurt your chances. But the weather, the motion picture, the movie industry, LeBron does a lot of strive for greatness hashtag, but he also talks about the James gang now. That means his wife, his daughter, the two sons. Now, they were definitely, which I have been persuaded to believe that they wanted to be in Los Angeles. It was going to be hard for his sons to play basketball under LeBron's at his high school that he went to in the Akron area. So I'm not surprised at all that they decided Los Angeles. Also, when you have no general manager and you have Magic Johnson, there's a huge difference in doing that they would have to overcome.
I here's the point there that I disagree with you. Magic is a trump card for a lot of things. I think if LeBron really wanted to go to Philadelphia, or if it was close, I think the general manager situation actually could have benefited Philly. Because he could have said, sometimes you get to pick your coach. You never get to pick your general manager. Because of the situation, the odd situation that their general manager is fired, not because of on-court failure, but because of nonsense off the court, and the guy LeBron trusts in David Griffin is still out there waiting for the perfect job, LeBron could have said, I'll come here, but you need to hire Griffin. And I believe they would have done that. So I don't think the Colangelo thing hurt the Sixers' chances. I think the Sixers were on the board, and then he made the decision, do I want to ever have to make another change in team? Do I want to ever have to make a decision 4.0? The Lakers are the team he's confident he'll never have to do that again with.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, Rob Gronkowski. He's hoping to just play for one more team, or is he? Still on the trading block? Next, first things first. First to start your morning. Toronto Raptors are generating buzz as another spot where Kawhi Leonard could get traded. Nick, any chance Kawhi ends up in Toronto?
Listen, Toronto's an interesting one because everyone forgets Toronto. Like, LeBron left the East. They won 59 games. Right now they've brought everyone back. If you were to flip either DeRozan or Lowry for Kawhi for 1 year, could you be with Philly and Boston in the East? Sure. It would be And also, by the way, there aren't many cities in the NBA that are further away from Los Angeles than Toronto. So it'd be a bit of a bleep you from the Spurs if that's where they were to send him. I think it's a bit of a pipe dream, but it's interesting basketball-wise.
Yeah, I don't see the assets, even though they do have those two star players. I don't see the combination of players and draft picks that would allow him. And I have to check with Kawhi and them. Let me see if T.O. got any closer to that, because that's what they call Toronto. They call it T.O. See if it got any closer to Los Angeles, because I know last time I talked to Kawhi's group, Los Angeles was the only destination.
Like, is Kawhi cool with Drake? Maybe Drake can do a little sell job for him? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
All right, let's move on to Jaylen Brown. Despite scoring 14 points, 5 rebounds last season, turning a number of heads, Jaylen says he isn't too good for summer league, and he'll consider playing a few games despite the risk of injury. CC, would this be a smart move for Jaylen Brown?
No, of course not. But I like the fact that he said it now. But it also speaks to what they might have with the Celtics in, because we know Kyrie might not want to be there, but between him and Jason Tatum, you got unique young guys, wing players that have game experience, got better in the playoffs than the regular season, and you know something? They love basketball. They love being out there. So that part I really understand and like and believe that's something that I can build on within this organization.
I think there's one underrated part of this, which is Jaylen Brown probably, even if it's just summer league, is thirsting for the opportunity to have a new basketball game be the most recent one he played, not game 7 against the Cavs, which was what maybe the worst game he'd ever played in his career. He was 0 for everything from 3. Like, he's obviously too good for summer league. Obviously the injury risk is too high, but he's coming off his lowest professional moment. He wants to get on the court again in a real game, try to erase it a little bit.
Tough loss for the Houston Rockets. The Clippers signed Luke Richard and Mbamute to a one-year deal. Houston had already lost Trevor Ariza to the Suns. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Rockets?
I don't think it's a big deal. Rockets fans are panicked about this. He was essentially unplayable due to injury in the playoff run, and they, despite that, they still went to 7 with the Warriors up 3-2 in the series. Daryl Morey said yesterday, their entire goal in signing free agents is to sign guys that can outplay their contracts. They got Mbamute last year for $2 million, and people are wondering if he's replaceable. Of course he's replaceable.
I doubt that on this. I disagree with you, because if you look at the wing players that they have to throw at Golden State, they got two less wing players. And if you look at reasons why, absent of Chris Paul and his injury, you can go to his injury being the most significant thing that happened to Houston. They didn't have enough bodies to throw at Kevin Durant, and he wasn't as good offensively because his shoulder shooting the basketball. They will suffer from these two losses, not just this one loss. It's the combination of both of these long, lengthy players.
Ariza and Bob.
Yes.
All right, finally, LeBron James officially signed with the Lakers yesterday. His former head coach, Ty Lue, met with his new head coach, Luke Walton, to discuss the challenges of coaching LeBron. See, how tough will Luke Walton's job be in year one?
I don't think it's that tough. The toughest job was the first assignment that he got was coaching the team that he coached last season. That was tough. Now, at least you got a superstar. You got direction. The game got easier for him with him and Rondo. Coaches on the court. Luke Walton, to me, his job got a lot easier. People would be like, well, now he's going to be under the pressure. That's what you want to be as a coach. You want a team that's relevant. You want players that can dominate and take over the game, because that part, he has to coach less now. Now, he's got to be more efficient. He's got to be accountable for his coaching, but he's got to coach less, because once LeBron gets the ball on the court or Rondo, there's a certain amount of coaching that they will do. They will take over on the court some of that from Luke.
Wait, hold on quick. So who has final say? So now it's a play that's going to get called. Maybe Luke calls a play, LeBron doesn't like it. You have a situation like this. Who has
Luke
final
has final say? I don't even want to get into LeBron trying to veto a play being called. But a lot of the NBA, it's not calling plays. It's getting the ball off the glass and trying to get up the court as soon as possible. Also, the Lakers, what do? They lead the NBA as far as pace. As far as the way they've played at a pace. So there's not going to be a whole bunch of situations we have to sit down. Well, who has the call?
And
that really doesn't
it's
matter.
It's fleetingly rare. I know yesterday I brought up the specific example of LeBron vetoing David Blatt. That is the reason I can bring up that specific example is because that doesn't happen very often.
It was more metaphorical, like who owns the locker room, like who's got the say, who's got the loudest voice.
Listen, the LeBron, if you listen to what Ty Lue said, there's a great article in the
Athletic.
There's
no team
yesterday.
LeBron's ever going to be on. Someone's going to have a bigger voice than him. I mean, he's LeBron James. He's got the best resume in the NBA. Who would want to try to supersede that? Who would want to be like, you know something? I know more basketball.
But what LeBron won't do, and Ty Lue talks about this in the article, is he never curses out a coach in front of the teammates or really at all.
Now, he cusses a lot, though. You have to.
Right, but there are, Ty Lue talked about a guy like Kobe, and this is not a knock at Kobe, but that Kobe would curse you up and down if he felt it was necessary. It's not LeBron's style. I also think we have to recognize what Luke Walton has been through in his two seasons. This will be his third as head coach. His first season as a head coach of the Lakers, he deals with that nonsense with D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young. The surreptitiously recorded video, superstar girlfriend, angry cheating allegations, right? Last year, he deals with the nonsense of LeVar constantly questioning him, questioning his job, questioning how good he is, and all the things going on with Lonzo. Yes, there will be much more scrutiny, right? There will be much more decisions. Ty talks about this in the article, that if LeBron wears a different wristband, all of a sudden people are speculating, is LeBron in a bad mood? Is he sending a message? What's the wristband mean? He's got to be ready for that and used to that. But it is, I would imagine as a head coach, if 30 head coaches in the NBA, who's the guy you would most like to coach right now? Probably the best player in the league, who also can be something of a coach on the floor. Now, Rondo can be mercurial and difficult, but if Rondo buys in, and that's going to be one of the tougher relationships, but if Rondo buys in, he's another coach on the floor. They also signed veteran players. Like, listen, Lance is a bit of a knucklehead. JaVale can be goofy, but those are veteran players. You're not teaching them how to play NBA basketball. Those guys know how to play NBA
basketball. And also, you have to take the time that he spent with Golden State. I know people like to discredit that because Golden State was so good. But dealing with superstar players on a day-to-day basis, Steve Kerr, he has the issue as far as his health. He can't be there. Luke Walton is the last voice. Now, you talk about Myers, the general manager, the great ownership, but Luke Walton is in the locker room on the road with these guys. And I believe that that time will be well served in taking over the Lakers with a LeBron James. I think people get caught too much up into the voices of strong players. As long as you have sports, you're going to have strong voices as far as players. And as long as you're playing this game, you need guys who understand the game. Luke Walton's a coach for a reason, all right? Athletically, his athletic ability took him so far. Now, he has the ability of the intellect of an NBA coach, but also the personal experience of being in those locker rooms. And I believe when you have players like LeBron, Rondo, and some of the other veterans, it's an asset to be able to have that information.
All right, let's move on to some football now. And Rob Gronkowski. And while the Patriots training camp gets underway in a little over 2 weeks, the Rob Gronkowski trade rumors just won't go away. One AFC executive commented that until New England restructures his contract, Gronk may still be available. See, do you see the Pats dealing Gronk at this point?
No, just another stupid report. He said he may be available. Well, we got 16 days. Now, do you guys think that
16 days until when?
Until they start training camp.
Gotcha.
So they got, Jenna said they got a little more than 2 weeks. So do you see Bill Belichick taking out Tom Brady's knees before he starts this season, which he's going to turn 41? Now, I don't see that. Now, Bill, people don't see his personality, but there's no way that he is trying to get Super Bowl number 6 by moving Gronkowski. It don't make sense. Look at their roster. They don't have another receiving tight end on their roster. They got Dwayne Allen as the backup. You know, look at his, if he had a career year, look at him filling in for Gronk if he was the starter. Look at their wide receivers. Let's go down the list. Edelman on the deck for 4 weeks. Jordan Matthews, Chris Hogan, Cordell Patterson, special teams players they're going to try to utilize in their offense. Malcolm Mitchell, hurt. Philip Dorsett, a bust, the first-round pick from the University of Miami. So y'all tell me this roster that they're going to trade Gronk. They can't afford to trade Gronk. When I look at this roster, like it would be one of the baddest moves that I have seen in the NFL for a team that had Super Bowl aspirations, because I believe immediately those Super Bowl aspirations would be removed.
Oh, wow. Okay, that last part's really interesting.
Oh, you look at this roster without Gronk. And you tell me something warm and fuzzy or sexy about this roster.
So if they were to trade Gronk, that the Pats, who are the biggest favorites to make the playoffs, they win the division every year, you don't think they'd have enough talent to compete for a Super Bowl?
I don't see the people here. I don't see how they're going to be able to do it. Wasn't their defense one of the worst in the NFL last year? Did they go out and get a bunch of free agents or something on the defensive side going to change that?
Well, that's the only way that I see this being a real possibility. Because we got to keep in mind, like, the Pats trade history, right? So they traded Brandon Cooks this offseason, knowing who their wide receivers were. But that was before the draft. That was when they were acquiring, yeah, they acquired a pick, but they knew they were getting a human being this year from that 23rd overall pick they got from the Rams. If you trade Gronk at this point, even if you get a first-round pick for him, which is what they got for Cooks, that doesn't pay dividends until next year. The only way I would see this as a possibility is if it were a player-for-player trade. But those are so rare in the NFL. Like, everyone remembers the Champ Bailey for Clinton Portis trade. You know why everyone remembers it? Because that might have been the last time two star players were traded for each other. We had Kiko Alonso traded for Shady McCoy, Max Unger for Jimmy Graham along some draft pick compensation. It's so rare that NFL teams go, okay, you need a tight end. We need help in the secondary. Let's call up the Rams and do a trade where we give you Gronk and you give us one of your surplus secondary guys. Like, that just that is... That doesn't really happen in this league. It happens in baseball, obviously. Happens all the time in the NBA. The only reason I can't just immediately just reject it, though, is the Pats do a lot of things that most teams that are in win-now mode don't do, because Belichick never seems to really be operating under the lens of we're in win-now exclusively. He always seems to be operating under the lens of extending this as long as possible. And so that's why, like, it didn't make sense to me them trading the Chandler Jones when they did. But they traded him.
It made sense to me because they had some off-the-field issues. They didn't want to invest the guarantees. They're not going to give him that big contract. So it made sense because they weren't going to sign him. So why let him walk in free agency when you know you're not going to resign? They had to trade him, and they had that stuff in the background as far as his character that they were concerned about.
Why won't they just wrap this up, extend his contract, and move on? Both sides need each other.
Because
what's
they know
the reason for the game?
Well, they know that he's injury prone. They don't want to invest a lot of money in him long term, because they don't do that with veteran players. You don't see them extend veteran players and give them guaranteed money. That's the reason why this will continue.
For Gronk, in your opinion, it's felt to me when he showed up after not showing up for a lot of the offseason that they were close on some type of, even if it's not a contract extension,
right,
some salary increase, right? We thought that they were getting closer on giving him more money.
Well, Gronk had told us, based on being there, that something had changed. I just believe in the conversation, they have made a promise to Gronk. Also, you have to go back to the report. This report's not coming from New England. It's coming from another team in the AFC. So, of course, in July, let's send out something about New England. So that's another distraction off of this team that you don't have. Ask the guy about his team, all right, compared to about New England. He's not an expert on New England. So when I look at this roster, I would be shocked, because of the best player in the NFL and Tom Brady, how it would affect him. People talk about, Lawyer Malloy, they traded him right before the season. Their roster was so much better. Their defense was a dominant defense, and Tom Brady was not approaching 41. So that's why I look at this report or rumor as I don't give it much credibility.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side, Carmelo Anthony waved by the Thunder, thinking Houston, but could beef with an old coach keep Carmelo out of Houston? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Yahoo NBA insider Jordan Schultz now joining the show again.
Good to see you, brother.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Great to have you.
Okay, we do NBA. Are you also NFL insider or
yes,
just NBA?
NFL.
Okay, so we
both.
just Insider. Okay, no problem. Yeah.
So you're basically going to be here year round.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys want me, I'm hanging. But I got to tell you, you're going to get sick of me.
I said the same thing, Jordan. I said the same thing, and I'm still here. Since don't give me that look. Since September, I'm not even making eye contact with you.
Nick's giving you a nasty.
I know, every day, Jordan.
Chris is looking at me. All right.
Between the two of us.
You brought it on yourself there, Jenna. Nobody asked you to walk through that door.
I told them. They gave you a contract.
Right, you don't got nothing to worry about.
Jordan's trying to get a contract.
I got 10 days.
Jordan's on a 10-day.
I got a 10-day.
Jordan's on a
10-day. And he believes he can do it.
All right. Here we go. Carmelo Anthony likely will be in search of a new team with all signs pointing to the Thunder moving on. And about that moving on, it's a bit of a don't let the door hit you on the way out. Melo coming off a rough year, but it's not stopping the suitors. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, the Rockets are determined to sign him, despite Melo's previous relationship with Mike D'Antoni when he coached the Knicks. Jordan, what do you think? Would Carmelo be a good fit in Houston with the pieces they currently have in place?
Yeah, well, I said yesterday, people around the league believe that he's going to end up a Houston Rocket. The issue with Carmelo and Mike D'Antoni was he was never a Mike D'Antoni kind of player. When he went from Denver to the Knicks, he was about bully ball, isolation, 18 feet away, face up, jab, jab, dribble, all of that. That's not Mike D'Antoni. But I think now,
I think people might be surprised when you think about D'Antoni and the type of players and scores that he had.
They think it's all offense, no defense.
Yeah.
So Melo would be perfect. But the way Melo scores,
as not an efficient 3-point shooter. Now, last year he made 169.
And ball stopper.
That won't work. And at 34 years old, in the twilight of his career, now he can sit down with Chris Paul, who, you know, I've said is advocating for him to be there. And Chris Paul can say, Melo, this is what we need. You're a microwave. You come off the bench. You play a role. Spread the floor. But you cannot be pounding the ball into the pavement like you did in Denver and with the Knicks to an even more degree. So to me, with Mike D'Antoni, he's not a guy that holds grudges. He's a guy that was ahead of his time. When he shepherded in this new system, that was way ahead of his time. Carmelo was not committed to that style of basketball. But now I think he can be.
I think that given what's happened with Trevor Ariza going to the Suns, yesterday's development, our boy Luke Richard, Bamute, decides to go to the Clippers. Yeah, Nick, I got it right.
You got it.
Yeah, as soon as he gets traded
to the team, we'll never talk about Cameron Prince again.
Thank you.
There you go.
That's a lob.
Absolutely.
Now, the space that's available in the lineup for Melo, to me, it's more advantageous for him to go there now compared to looking at the wing players they had. My biggest problem is going to be the buy-in defensively, because that's what I saw from these other players. I saw their stars, Chris Paul, Harden, Ariza, all these guys sacrifice everything, offense, but more on the defensive end, and they played. If you can be a Houston team that play defense on a rope, they played on a rope as much as they have. I've seen that collection of players play on a rope.
I agree with you, but I credit three guys primarily for that.
Capella.
I think if you have Capella, P.J. Tucker, and Chris Paul playing big minutes, you're going to have a good defense. Chris Paul, even at this age, one of the best.
But if you don't have the buy-in switching, especially in the Western Conference, that's the problem.
You're dead.
Agreed. Yeah. You have to. The guys have to buy into it. I agree with that. But they don't have to be naturally gifted defenders. Eric Gordon ain't no great defender, but he bought in. So you're right that Melo has to buy into it. But I think sometimes guys go from they're so underrated, they become overrated. And sometimes the opposite happens. Melo, his last couple years in New York, was an overrated basketball player. I remember that NBA rank thing came out, and Melo was, I don't know, I think he was like 27th. And people were, are you kidding me? And that was about right. At one point, he was overrated. And now I think we've swung too far in the other direction. Because I'm going to bring up another guy that could go to any team this offseason, and will go to some, and he'll be signed for around the money that Melo's going to end up signing for, off-the-bench scorer, and no one's going to say one bad word about him. Jamal Crawford.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Jamal Crawford, by the way, last year shot the same percentage from the field as Melo, shot a worse percentage from three, ain't no defender. And Jamal Crawford, because he is properly rated and you know what you're getting with him, you'd be like, he could be
but
a good bench
Jamal
option.
Jamal Crawford knows where he's rated.
Yes,
I think the
difference.
Problem is Carmelo doesn't see himself the way the rest of the league sees him.
And he doesn't guard anybody. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. That's why he couldn't play in the playoffs. Forget the fact that he goes 0-9 in Game 7 versus Utah. He couldn't guard anybody. And so my thing with the Rockets last year was the first time under D'Antoni, and really for the Rockets, they go top 10 defensive efficiency. That was a big difference and a big boost for them. If Carmelo goes there and he's not willing to guard anybody, what are we talking about? He can't be on the floor.
Well, listen, I guess maybe I think people evolve, and even if they don't go through some cataclysmic change, I think sometimes drastic life events can help you take a step back. Melo being waived for the first time in his basketball life. Melo seeing an enormous...
Wait.
Yeah.
They gave him $28 million to go home.
Yeah.
Well, they're about to,
He wasn't waived, bruh.
Well, they're
paying him to leave.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's what being waived is, right? Where they're
being waived is you ain't getting paid. Well, that's a setback.
That's the sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Bought out. Well, I don't know if he's going to buy out or waived. Yeah. But regardless, the point is they are. That's more to my point. We would rather, and a lot of this has to do with luxury tax. We have to pay you this money no matter what. We're better off without you than with you. Is what Melo is going to be receiving. Also, he's going to be, for the first time in his basketball career, being teamed with a guy that he, I don't want to say looks up to, but that he looks even eye to eye with, and that he has such respect for in Chris Paul if he does go to Houston. And he is, for the first time, I believe, staring at his basketball mortality. He knows that if wherever I go next it doesn't work, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so if that doesn't make you go through some type of adjustment, then nothing will. Now, you're hesitant about if he can adjust. Like, if a guy can go through that type of
thing. What was last summer, Nick?
Last summer
he should have had the same attitude that you're talking about right now.
No, because last summer it wasn't an insult. Last summer was an exciting moment for him. Oh, I'm going to a contender. I am a part of a big three. Yeah. Last summer, people were talking about the Thunder as if they could be fringe Western Conference contenders.
He can trick himself to think the same thing now. He's really on a contender now. OKC was not a contender.
I mean, they're a Chris Paul potentially hamstring away from winning a championship. Mm-hmm. And so Carmelo, if he were to come here, he has to not only accept but embrace that role, because that's the only way this thing can work. And that, going back to yesterday's point about Team USA Melo, that's the only Melo that works with Houston. Catch and shoot threes, don't put the ball on the deck, and certainly cannot play bully ball.
Listen, last year, there was a ton of excitement in Oklahoma City. Yeah. There was with the three of them. But three quarters of the way through the season, when it wasn't working and they were like, okay, Melo might have to come off the bench, he didn't want to do that. Remember, we kept talking about it. He was disgruntled. Right. He didn't like his playing time being reduced. He didn't want to do it when it was for the betterment of the team. So now you're going to a situation where you're going to have to,
for whatever it's worth, I don't think that's accurate. I don't think they ever floated taking him off the bench during the season. It was floated at a press conference by a reporter before
early,
the season.
Right. Yes.
And he dismissed it. I don't think they ever went to
And based
him.
On them having the roster that they had, it didn't make sense. You go to a stock team, then you ask the veteran that question. Yeah, he probably would have given you a different answer, but I can't look at their roster and them not have a better small forward than me and say, you know something? I think I should be a bench player. No, that would be ridiculous. But I would be more comfortable if Ariza and them was still there and he was coming to Houston as a bench player, because I believe he's a liability if he is a starter.
Here's the last point I'll make on this. I really, and you guys know this, I really trust the Rockets' brain trust, Daryl Morey and those people. I also think I really trust Chris Paul. I do not think they're not desperate.
No.
I do not think they will sign Carmelo Anthony unless they have had all these discussions, unless they are in full agreement on everything about it. Oklahoma City last year was desperate. Oklahoma City thought, man, if we don't, we've got Russ, we've got to try to contend as much as possible. Now that we've got Paul George, let's see what we can do. And they bring in Melo, and it doesn't work out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll turn out that Melo's done. That Melo, that year 14 was his last productive year. But I don't think that'll be the case.
I'm going to go on record as this. If Chris Paul, in his conversation, talking to Carmelo Anthony, makes him play some defense, it'll be the first time in NBA history that your buddy talked you into playing some D. Because I have never seen it happen.
And they lose in Bob Mute and Ariza, two of their best defenders, most versatile defenders. But here's this with Carmelo. Chris Paul and Harden, they were able to come together and embrace the fact that they wouldn't always have the ball. Specifically Paul, playing off the ball to a degree, letting Harden work. Carmelo's never done that. So, again, it's something he'd really have to do differently. And I don't know if he's there yet.
All right, Jordan, stick around. Coming up, will LeBron regret signing in L.A.? That is next. Back here on First Things First with Jordan Schultz. For the viewing public, it appeared as if LeBron James' decision 3.0 wasn't a terribly tough one. He wanted the Lakers. He signed with the Lakers. But league insiders believe It was a harder decision than most think. The Sixers say LeBron very strongly considered coming to Philly. Jordan, you think the uncertainty in the front office there in Philadelphia hurt their chances of landing LeBron?
I think marginally. I think that the Lakers, for him, always made the most sense because it was the opportunity to resurrect basketball in L.A., win a championship, put himself in the Magic, Kareem, you know, that type of stratosphere.
Where
Elgin Baylor, Jerry
live.
West, Kobe. Yeah, exactly. And the fact that Philadelphia was a little bit rudderless in the front office, to me, not that important because Brett Brown was kind of the trigger man, and they have ownership. And I never really thought that from a basketball perspective, the Sixers were a great fit. I mean, they have Ben Simmons. He's fantastic. But he needs the ball as well. And if LeBron goes there, what are you doing with him? He's not making threes. He didn't even make a three last year. So to me, it didn't make a big deal. I think it probably hurt him a little bit, but
it didn't make the most sense.
Yeah, it didn't make the most sense. And going to LA for LeBron was just a bigger than basketball decision. It was a personal decision, and the opportunity, like I said, to win a championship in LA is just different than anywhere else.
I thought he could have fit into Philadelphia, but I didn't think it was a long term. If he did go to Philadelphia, I thought it was going to warrant another decision. And based on what I was hearing from his family, and I knew that the industry, the motion picture industry, all those things LeBron has interest in, media, it's in Los Angeles. So they had a huge advantage going in. So the general manager, that being a small part. What is the roster? That's only a small part, because if not, he don't decide to go to L.A. with all those young players and also a young coach. So I do believe that they do play a role, but unless he wants to make another decision, which based on what we were hearing, that's not what they wanted to do, to make another decision in another year or two, the Lakers was the best decision for his enterprise, for his family. Like I said, it's hard to make a decision to go to Philadelphia, even though it's the closest to Cleveland, and be able to leave his family in Akron and go back and forth. That didn't make sense for me. For LeBron James, because he's going to have to leave there again. And I didn't think he wanted to make that decision.
All right, that last point's the most important one, that if the Philly decision wouldn't have been a lifelong decision, the L.A. one can be. Mm-hmm. Also, we do have to look at the precedent of when LeBron has moved teams, where he has gone. I understand Miami was considered one of the first super teams, but that might, and he brought Chris Bosh with him. But Miami had not won a playoff series since they won the championship. Right. Or they had not won a playoff series in 4 years, and the guy he brought with him had won 3 playoff games ever. When he went back to Cleveland, they had not been to the playoffs since LeBron was there. They had 4 straight years high in the lottery. Now he goes to the Lakers, where they've had five years
straight, yes,
out of the playoffs. LeBron has never joined a team that was at the previous season
ready to win.
Now Miami became ready to win because they brought the best player in the world and another top 15 guy in Bosh. Cleveland became ready to win because Kyrie was up and coming, and they flipped Wiggins for
Love. Don't forget how much they struggled in Miami. It was not immediately a super team. Now I know they predicted 5, 6, 7 championships, but that first month and a half, 2 months, man, it was bizarre. Yeah. People had thought they had made the wrong decision.
And by the way, that first month or first couple months in Cleveland as well. If people remember, first couple months in Cleveland, there's a game where Kyrie Irving has 0 assists.
Yeah.
And LeBron says, listen, man, you got to have at least one. Like, you got to find a way to have an assist. That was the game prior to that. He had 1 assist, and LeBron had talked to him in the locker room. So at one point, he pulled a Kobe game 7 against the Suns. He just stood in the corner. Let Kyrie and Deion Waiters
You guys go ahead.
You guys go ahead. Yeah. They end up trading Deion Waiters. They make a big trade. Like, a lot, there was drama early on. And so LeBron, maybe this is hubris. Maybe it's overconfidence. But there's not a lot of math for LeBron about where is the best contending option. Because he believes he goes becomes an instant contender.
Yeah.
And he knows in L.A. they have the, geographically speaking, they are best suited to draw another star.
Yeah, you know, I do a podcast with C.J. McCollum. C.J. says that when you have LeBron, you're a contender. And part of that is the fact that you're going to be able to go out and attract blue chip free agents. And that's what they're betting on. Mm-hmm. Next summer, LeBron's your recruiter with Magic. And maybe you don't get Kawhi now, but maybe you get him next summer or another guy. And now you have an Clay. Now you have an opportunity to build around LeBron. And remember, this is a big ego thing because he wants guys to come play with him. He needs to have that. Mm-hmm. Right now they're not a championship roster, but they will be.
Which is why he didn't need to decide, you know, looking at different teams who would contend. He knew wherever he went he could contend, so he could take the second most important thing, or maybe even the first most important thing, which is lifestyle and family and education and all of it, and make that his primary decision-making.
Yeah, and I think being in L.A. for him is an opportunity that he's never had. That type of bigger than basketball, he had that in Miami to a degree, but it wasn't the same. Now he could, like you said, production company. I mean, this is a different deal for him, man.
Yeah, for at that time in Miami, LeBron was trying to work. He said the move to Miami was like going to college.
Yeah.
So when you're in college, you're not trying to start a business. So the production concept and those things were still
graduate
future.
School.
Yeah. Those things were, they were going to try to do those. LeBron was trying to decide, man, do I drive to work or ride a bike? Man, remember he was riding his bike to work because he was trying to get even fitter. He had the issue with the cramping. Yeah. So he was trying to learn even a deeper understanding of what it is to be an elite athlete. That's where he became a champion. This is where he builds his business empire and his family is able to relax in the Los Angeles area.
I would just close by saying, I've reported this. Kawhi wants to play with LeBron. Now, I don't know if they're going to get him now. I don't think they will. But they are at some point going to have a great opportunity to get him.
And so you are reporting Kawhi does want to play with
him. He wants to play with LeBron.
Compared to what people are saying, that Kawhi now might want to play with the Clippers just because LeBron, the attention, are with the Lakers.
When it comes to the Lakers, Kawhi, the selling point from Kawhi, the conversation he had with LeBron was this: I can alleviate pressure from you for three quarters defensively by locking up. I can be a catch and shoot guy because 2 years ago he tied Kevin Durant for catch and shoot percentage, 38% corner threes. He's a great shooter, Kawhi.
Great
he can play
shooter.
Off the ball, and that was a big selling point. That doesn't mean they're ultimately going to get him right now. But I do believe they will get him, and as a result, I think it's gonna be a great success. I really do with those two.
Jordan, thank you so
and
much
for
being here.
And that podcast he mentions, excellent.
Yeah, with CJ McCollum.
CJ was here, right?
Yeah, he was.
We need more wine.
Yeah.
I plugged your podcast. I need more wine.
I'm coming with that.
I don't drink.
I'm coming with that.
27 years, 60.
Yeah, what do you need wine?
Yeah, that's
for my friends that drink.
Okay.
I'll bring some wine.
Which, I'll take it.
I got you.
Milo Manischewitz.
The bone broth.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll take that.